Hi, my name is Monica Rada, and my favorite thing is the Canadian crime drama Murdoch Mysteries.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Hello, and welcome to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones. It's Sunday, October 17th. I am in between naps. On Monday this week, I had oncoplasty, which is plastic surgery related to breast cancer. So I had a breast reduction, and I have spent this week napping in a recliner. My big lesson this week is that if you have the means to rent a medical recliner with a lift after a major surgery, this has changed everything about recovering from surgery for me. I've been sleeping and napping in this recliner, and it has a motor that helps me stand up. And I can only imagine how much easier my hysterectomy would have been if I'd had this piece of medical equipment in my life. Last night, I thought I might be ready to sleep in my own bed, but all I wanted to do was turn on my side, and that is not comfortable yet. So sleeping in the recliner keeps me cocooned and on my back and safe from injuring myself. Although I have to say I'm recovering quite well. I saw my plastic surgeon on Friday. We removed the drains. Bruising was minimal thanks to the vacuum pumps. And I'm doing well, but I'm taking it super easy still. My mom was up this week, and so we took the advice of my guest today. So today my guest is Monica Rada. She's a journalist and author, and we talked all about this Canadian procedural crime drama called Murdoch Mysteries, and I was like, hey, Mom, this sounds like a show that might be good for us to watch together, one that if I drift in and out of, I'll catch up on the next episode. And so I spent the week getting to know the Murdoch Mysteries, and so I'm grateful for Monica for suggesting this TV show. Because it was a blast. It's been really good. It's a good healing show to watch. It's on Hulu. Other than that, thank you to Dave Kustin. He was my guest the week. He talked about getting a trumpet and starting to play trumpet as an adult. And he is also an editor and sound engineer. And so to keep this moving while I am in and out of napping and chemotherapy, he's helping me with the podcast. So thank you to Dave Kustin for editing this week and a few future weeks of the show. And I think that's all I've got today, because like I said, I'm in between naps, and the chair is looking really comfortable right now. Wear your mask, wash your hands, and keep enjoying your favorite things. Hello and welcome to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones, and this is the podcast where we learn about people's favorite things and get recommendations without using an algorithm. Tonight, I am with Monica Rada, who is a freelance writer. You have seen their work in Gaper's Block, one of our favorite local websites, and more recently on Alma, which is a Jewish website. And I'm so glad that she's joining us here tonight. Monica, how are you?
I'm doing great, Leah.
Are you in for a gloomy Friday night where you are?
It actually ended up being pretty nice today, which came in handy because I live very close to a wonderful patisserie not far from my apartment. And following their Instagram is the best and worst thing for me, because anytime they have like a limited edition gluten-free baked good, I know to make a beeline over there. And today was the first day it was sunny here, and I'm wearing all black because that's just how I dress. And I threw on my black denim motorcycle jacket. I'm wearing my combat boots, walking over to the patisserie because they had a raspberry chocolate tort.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those things where it was, I want to get this because I don't want them to be sold out tomorrow when I go there in the morning to get something. And I think like halfway there, I was like, oh, damn it. All of my punk aesthetic is just not working with this at all. So it was actually very nice today for the first time this week. I'm not sure how this week, I think it's supposed to rain this weekend, but I'm actually going to be kind of closer to the Illinois-Wisconsin border. Mm-hmm. So if it's rainy, I'm okay with that. It's October. I think we all know that October kind of around the Great Lakes, it's just rainy season. You get like that nice autumn for like 2 weeks and then it's just like dreary. Have your raincoat and your coat ready.
Yeah. This is Caesar. He is my nephew's cat and he is an aggressive cuddler.
So. I will say if you hear Muse in the background, that's my cat.
Okay.
He is named Kamari. He is the loudest boy.
Okay.
But he's been pretty well behaved actually while I was waiting for us to start recording this. He actually was curled up in a little bed that I bought at IKEA that I keep next to my desk because sometimes if I'm working, he likes to just, you know, curl up and be like, okay,
like a little
mommy.
Bed that looks like a little human bed.
No, it's kind of like a little box and it fits into one of those like modular IKEA shelving systems.
Yes.
So I bought that because he just loves anything he can curl up in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just try to have those scattered all over my gigantic apartment because I moved from an apartment where it was like a tiny studio to just a ginormous apartment. And then I need plenty of places for you to curl up.
Right. Yeah. He's got to be cozy. Got to have some cave options.
Yes.
Yeah. Right now we're currently a 4-cat household, which is the most cats I've ever lived with. So it's Caesar and Calvin are my nephew's cats. And then my boys are Cowboy and Spidey, and they're all currently in the living room with me. Despite this being a fairly large apartment, they're all like, it's podcast time. We're here. We'll be here. So Caesar, go. Okay. So before we hit record, we were talking about sound and sound quality that you borrowed a microphone for tonight. And we were talking about like about learning how to use a microphone. And then we were talking about places where we've sat in different areas of different specific theaters and what sound is, you know, like the dead zones and the kind of weird places and weird ways that acoustics can mess with a theater. And then you were getting ready to give an impassioned defense of the musical Come From Away. And we said, no, hit record. We can't miss this. So, Monica, I want to hear your defense of Come From Away. Which I've seen once. I did really enjoy it. So I'm not anti.
Okay. That I haven't met anyone who is anti Come From Away. I just like, I think the most reaction was that some people maybe found it a little too maudlin when it opened on Broadway, except it was also the same people who were like, Dear Evan Hansen is like the greatest thing since sliced bread. And I'm like, it's a musical about a white sociopath.
Right.
That treats him as an inspirational figure. And there's literally a lyric, I'm tap, tap, tapping on that glass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Dear Evan Hansen was really one where I think we were all wowed by the set design because it is hard to communicate social media and digital technology on stage. So I think that confused us. And then we thought it was good.
Well, and having seen various Broadway productions where the whole thing is like we're using projections, we're using digital screens, a lot of it, I sit there and I go, I don't know why you're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
This is something you really don't need. You know, give me an old like traditional fly thing. Like that's all I really need. And I think Dear Evan Hansen is one of the few shows to realize how to use that to enhance the show rather than to detract from it. But we're getting off topic because I do not, this is called Finding Favorites and that is not the place for me to talk about Dear Evan Hansen. So I saw Come From Away and I was very familiar with the music. For some reason, I never got around to seeing it when I lived in New York City because I was living there very early, around the same time as it being very early on in its Broadway run. So I saw it at the Marcus Center for the Performing Arts, which is Milwaukee's big performing arts center.
Okay. So is that what the touring Broadway shows come through?
Yes.
Okay.
And so it was in the cavernous Eline Hall, which of course, yes, it is named after the same people who are the own Uline. Because horrible politics, but they are really good philanthropists. Mm-hmm. So their names are on a lot of things in Milwaukee. Yeah. And it was one of those shows where that's just like this cavernous space and you have to just try to fill it the best you can. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of touring shows have to do that. And it's why sometimes touring shows, I think, maybe don't work in touring spaces because they tend to be kind of built for a Broadway theater when they start. Right. I had that experience when I saw Fun Home on Broadway. I loved it there because it was
in the almost round.
A claustrophobic experience. Yeah. Yes.
I won lottery tickets to Fun Home. It was still in the round. And that was the same. I saw that in the after at the matinee. And then I saw Hamilton for the first time with the original Broadway cast that night.
Oh.
So that was a brutal emotional day for me.
That's the day where you you maybe go and you eat your feelings in pizza afterwards.
Right. And rehydrate. I cried. So I just cried the whole day.
I think it was, I remember physically shaking from how, mm-hmm. I had to collect my emotions after Fun Home. And then I was still shaking on the subway.
Yeah.
But then when Fun Home was at what used to be the Oriental Theater in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw Come From Away.
Yeah.
It was this thing where I immediately started sobbing from the end of the song, Me and the Sky,
mm-hmm.
which is this number where the first female pilot in United States history is singing about her journey to becoming a pilot. And it ends with her singing about flying on September 11th. And she sings, and the one thing I loved more than anything was used as the bomb.
Mm.
And I just, absolute waterworks. I had the same experience when I'm home. It's and this is the moment where I just was sobbing until the end of the show. And that was similarly my experience with Come From Away, is that that happened. And then there are moments where you're feeling happy again. The cute British couple and cute British man and the one from Texas, they're falling in love, mm-hmm. and they don't want to leave. And then there are just more heartbreaking moments because the show, even though it's a very uplifting musical about a bunch of people in a small Canadian town coming together to help people stranded on September 11th, it's very honest about the tragedies, both political and mm-hmm. personal, surrounding September 11th, including the Islamophobia that was very present immediately after September 11th. And I was just absolutely devastated by it. It was also very funny because I remember seeing it. It was during the 2019 NBA playoffs. And so pretty much everybody was like, that was very lovely, checks their phones to see what the Bucks score is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was also a nightmare getting out of downtown Milwaukee because...
Were the Bucks in the finals?
Yes. Bucks, well, they weren't in the finals because this was the first year they made the finals. This 2019 was the year that they got eliminated by the, speaking of Canada, Toronto Raptors.
Okay, yes.
Because the Fiserv Forum, which is where the Milwaukee Bucks play, is across the river from the Marcus Center.
Oh.
I just remember my mom and I just sat in the parking garage for 30 minutes and then we could finally move. But then later that same year, I was in Toronto and I got tickets for Come From Away mm-hmm. to see it with my boyfriend at the time. And we got that as a Hanukkah present from his parents. And so I saw it with this Canadian cast that had been doing it for 2 years in this house in Canada. And there were actually a bunch of people from Newfoundland
mm-hmm.
in the balcony. And so you could just feel this different energy there because it's it means more to Canadians because it's Canada represented on the stage.
Yeah. So they had a sit down cast for 2 years in Toronto.
They still do.
They still do. Wow.
They I actually have a special sweatshirt for the Toronto company. It says "Come From Away, Toronto," and then on the back it says "Made in Canada." Which has been fun because I've worn that when I'm out and about and people assume I'm Canadian.
Right. Yes. It would be good to wear international traveling.
I should do that. Like when I, if I go to Japan next year, I should wear that so that people think I'm from Canada where they actually are caring about vaccinating people.
Yeah. All right. So here's my question, because you do seem to consume a lot of Broadway shows. Come From Away and A Band's Visit. Same story.
I am actually not that familiar with The Band's Visit. And that was actually the, that winning the Tony was like the year I stopped caring about the Tony Awards. Because so the year before that is the year Dear Evan Hansen sweeps it. And
yeah,
which I am sure there are awards that show won that were very well deserved, but how the fuck did a show with four instruments win best orchestrations when you had like the 23 piece bonkers score for Great Comet?
There. Yes. I saw Great Comet twice, and that was, but it was amazing. It was, I saw it with Oak, who had come over from Hamilton, and he was phenomenal as Pierre.
I saw it when it still had Josh Groban. And I will say, there are two shows I have seen in my life where I've seen a lot of people walk out. And one was Great Comet. And I think it was a thing where there were probably tourists who were like, oh, Josh Groban's in this. I'll like this. The other one was Linda Vista at Steppenwolf, where I think, which it's very much about like this gross 50-year-old man who is like trying to like, he's very much a man child, but he's trying to stop being a man child.
Right.
But there was very frank, full frontal nudity and simulated sex scenes. And I think that a lot of the people who are Steppenwolf donors were not ready for that.
No. A lot of people walked out of, originally it's a trilogy. It's a, like a 1970s. It's a,
Falsettos.
March of the Falsettos. That was one where people at halftime, at intermission, were just streaming out of the theater.
There were people not even waiting for intermission when I saw Great Comet. Like, people are just like, because they, I mean, they had the lights pretty like raised during the show because of the immersive environment, and people were just getting up and leaving. They were like, nope, this isn't for me. And I'm like, someone's like high kicking right next to my face, and I'm here for it.
Great Comet was just such a wild, I love it. I love it so much. Every time I get mail from a friend that's like an actual letter, I have to stop and sing like, we get letters. We write letters. In 18th century Russia, we write letters. We write letters. So
My favorite thing to just like belt when I'm cooking dinner is Charming, because it's like one of those few Broadway songs that is immediately in my range. Except then when I go, Chamonte, Chamonte, I'm like, you're sounding so pretentious because you're like, I have to pronounce this the proper French way.
Yes. Oh, man. I am so ready for go back to the theater. I'm so ready. I'm scared, but I want to go back.
I'm willing to go depending on the venue, because I know Goodman Theater has a very strict policy. I think Steppenwolf does as well. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but the musical Six.
Yeah. I've had tickets to it twice now. It keeps getting canceled. I would like to be able to see it.
I think that's the story about the pandemic is like, I finally, the first live performance I finally went to ended up being a Mountain Goats show here in Milwaukee.
Okay.
At the Pabst Theater, which is this absolutely beautiful, I mean, it's built by Captain Frederick Pabst, so it's like at ornate to the maximum.
Yeah.
It has a gorgeous crystal chandelier. So it's a very fun show to see the Mountain Goats and see like people with like ripped off denim shoulders, like, and mohawks holding rosaries up high, because that's what you see at a Mountain Goats show.
Yeah.
And I ended up getting those tickets because I had tickets to a Welcome to Night Vale live show.
Okay.
And that got postponed, and then it got postponed again. And then it finally got canceled and the venue came back and they said, you can exchange these tickets for literally anything on our calendar. And I was like, Mountain Goats, which of course the hilarious thing is that there's a Mountain Goats podcast on the Welcome to Night Vale podcast network.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing. Now, you said also before we hit record, and we're getting to your favorite thing very soon.
This is a slow lead up and we're just teasing it out.
Act one is always chit chat. Act one is chit chat. That you were coming on a podcast to talk about something other than podcasts. What, I just know you from Twitter. What do you do that you would talk about podcasts or podcast research a lot?
Well, in my past life, I was in law school. And by my past life, I mean up until this past April.
Okay.
Or as it turns out, being in law school is very stressful to you.
Yes.
It shouldn't shock anyone. And it caused a lot of my health conditions to go crazy.
Yeah.
And I pretty much have told people, like, I might go back to law school, but I will literally need a clearance from a cardiologist.
Ooh, what year were you in when you had to press pause?
Second year of law school.
Yeah.
And like I have a heart condition that I finally got diagnosed and I
congratulations.
Thank you. I'm still trying to navigate it, but like last week it flared up and it's very funny because I write about the coffee industry.
Mm-hmm.
So you can also read some of my work in Barista Magazine, another plug. So I know a lot about coffee. I love coffee. And like last week it flared up and it was, I can't drink coffee because caffeine is another thing that exacerbates it when it flares up. But it got so bad that I nearly collapsed in the middle of my professional responsibility class.
Oh dear.
Thankfully that class was taught by a very, very lovely man. And so he pretty much took the stance where he was like, go take care of yourself, stay hydrated, rest. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see you in my class until you are 100%.
Okay.
But I had to tap out because of health issues. And then finally I was like, I'm going to like not rush into going back to law school.
Yeah.
Because it's also like, I love studying the law. Do I actually want to be a lawyer?
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, the person I'm now in a relationship with, his father is an attorney.
Yeah.
And so he very much is like, you can do law stuff. You can don't have to be a practicing attorney and use your legal degree.
Right.
So, but that's something where I'm like, I'm going to take time. I'm going to do a breather. I'm going to write. Writing makes me happy. Mm-hmm. I actually returned to writing when I was in law school and people are like, how can you do that? That's taking up too much time. And it's like, but it makes me happy.
Right.
And I need to not, like, I probably would have, like, had my health fall apart much quicker if I hadn't started writing again.
Yeah.
So anyway, when I was in law school, I started doing research on legal issues involving podcasts.
Wow. I'm sure there are so many.
It's been very, very fun. And it's also with like streamers and things like that.
Yeah.
One of the fun things I like tweeted out a whole thread about was that the show Critical Role, which is a tabletop role-playing show, they just like released a very comprehensive legal guide. And I was reading it and it was very clear. It's like, okay, you wrote this in a way where it's not filled with legalese.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also clear to me as someone who went to law school that you sat down with your attorneys and you very clearly created something comprehensive.
Mm-hmm.
So the first paper I wrote, which is called You Must Roll 18 or Higher for Your Claims to Succeed, Common Law Trademarks, Unauthorized Fan Merchandise, and the podcast The Adventure Zone, because that's another tabletop role-playing game podcast. So that was very much dealing with this whole issue that particular podcast has, where the creators have pretty much said, no, we don't like fan-made merchandise.
Right. Like you can make a fan shirt, but they don't want you selling their, like the McElroys don't want you profiting off of their images and creations.
Exactly. Yeah. I actually just downloaded, it's not podcast related, but I just finished reading a great fantasy novel that my elevator pitch for it to people is lesbian necromancers in space.
Okay.
It's called Gideon the Ninth. It's like one of those rare books where every single page I'm reading it and I'm going, I love this book. This book is bonkers and I am 100% here for it.
Yeah.
And someone made a Gideon the Ninth inspired beanie knit pattern and they uploaded it, but it's free. So because it's free, the author and then the publisher don't really have a legal ground for that.
Right.
So I wrote that paper, except then, because I'm not a fan of the McElroys, I feel like that's occasionally kind of blasphemous. But it was very fun because then I wrote this paper. I got asked to be on podcasts, on panels, and then everybody assumed, oh, you're a fan of the McElroys. I'm like, not really. Most of the podcasts I listen to are French.
Right. You mostly listen to podcasts in French?
Yes. Okay. My big pandemic project was I improved my French proficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And so because I don't really know a lot of French speakers, listening to podcasts in French is one of the ways that I kind of keep up with the language. And then I also, so I wrote that paper and it is floating online. I can possibly send it to you and you could put it in the show notes if you want. But then the other, I also wrote another paper when I was on the intellectual property law review because there's been a lot of conversations about who gets to control the copyright of a podcast. Is it the actual distributor or is it the creator of the podcast?
Mm.
So I pretty much looked at the whole point of the paper is looking at the current copyright law in the United States and using that and using precedent to say, here's what works for a classification. And this is what's going to be the friendliest for creators.
Yeah.
That hasn't been published, but I did give it to some friends who are media scholars. And they were like, this is very intriguing. And I'm honestly looking at all of the podcasts I listen to in a whole new light after reading this.
Cool.
So it, usually I'll like pop onto Twitter and I'll have like these like threads about what's going on in the law and podcasts or streaming because I was doing that as research for a bit. So
yeah, because I also think it's interesting, you know, like I am a big fan of the Doughboys.
Another Maximum Fun podcast.
Yes. No. I think they're HeadGum.
Okay, my bad. You can edit that out.
It's okay. The Doughboys did like a 25-hour live stream on Twitch, the Doughathon, to raise money for restaurant workers, and they were so careful. They of like making sure they didn't let any copyrighted audio slip through or, you know, like they followed all of the rules because they didn't want their 25-hour, they didn't want their stream to get cut. And that's the sort of thing that I would find out on hour 4 and I would just mess it up. Right.
Right.
So I do think those issues, there's your boy, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
He has now returned from wherever he was and is now just meowing in the background.
It's totally fine. It's totally fine. But I think those issues are really interesting. I interviewed somebody about Bruce Springsteen and I was like, I'll be clever. I will use like a short enough clip that it'll be common. No, Bruce Springsteen's people. Mm-mm, no.
Well, and that whole like you need to use a short enough clip that's right. Almost like a myth because there's pretty much like no legal like consensus as to what is a short enough clip.
Right.
And you particularly see that with sampling. And I think another like huge interesting thing is the whole argument over like plagiarism in pop music. Because I think like even Olivia Rodrigo had to like give credit to Paramore for Good For You, and of course I'm not someone
for like a chord progression or something.
Yeah, it's just so strange. And I think like, and with all of that, it's like, okay, but you know, I feel like at this point there's been so much music that you're probably like something's gonna get stuck in your head.
Yeah.
And then it's probably accidental, and it's very strange, it's very weird. And I feel like especially with the streaming world that, and I think especially with the internet, that complicates everything.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm gonna recommend a book to you that I hope can still be found. I think it's my friend Matthew David Brozick. He's an acquaintance. We've been Facebook friends for a long time, but we've never met in person. And he was a copyright and intellectual property attorney before he became a copywriter. And he wrote a book called Taking Ivy Seriously, which is a critique of the modern copyright system, but seen through like a teenager who accidentally becomes poet laureate because she sent a poem into the copyright office. And it's like a way to unravel and learn about copyright in America, but through fiction. It was really eye-opening for me when I read it.
I'll have to check that out and add it to my increasingly growing list of books that I'm in the process of reading.
Well, Monica, I lured you here with the opportunity to talk about a favorite thing, and then I made you talk about Dear Evan Hansen, made you talk about like podcast research, but you said you have a Canadian crime show that you love, and even more than that, you love Canadian TV.
Yes.
What's up with that?
So, actually, my favorite show of all time is a Canadian show, but that kind of doesn't connect to everything else because I kind of found it as a bit of almost an outlier compared to all of the other Canadian shows I love. But I attended Michigan State University for undergrad.
Okay. And, go Spartans.
No. Yes. Go green. Yes. Go white.
Okay. I'm like, right? No? Okay.
I actually was on a board of directors with someone, and I finally had to explain to him that Michigan State, you yell like go green and someone responds with go white, because apparently he would be on Michigan State's campus. He'd be wearing a Michigan State hoodie because he thought they looked cool. And people would yell go green and he'd go, yeah. So that's like, also become a running joke is that it'll come out of nowhere and we'll bring up Michigan State and it'll be go green, go white.
Yeah.
So for some reason, Michigan State gets CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, on its dorm cable.
Okay.
So, and I don't know.
But Michigan State's not that close to the border. It's not like, it's not a Detroit school right across from Windsor.
It's not a Detroit school. It's even Michigan is in Ann Arbor is closer to the Canadian border than Michigan State. But I guess maybe Michigan State is close enough.
Sure.
Like maybe you're not going to get it in Kalamazoo.
Right.
So because of that, I would watch CBC. And that actually, the very strange thing for me is I'm a fan of the Montreal Canadiens. And that always is like, why the hell are you a fan of the Montreal Canadiens? Except people are like, oh, you grew up in Iowa. You should be a fan of the Chicago Blackhawks. And I'm like, actually, I was like a kid, like in very much the Disney, like height of the Anaheim Ducks. So I probably should be an Anaheim Ducks fan.
Right.
Like I see the old Wild Wing mask and that old color scheme and I get a wave of nostalgia. So like that has an emotional connection for me. The Blackhawks, I think about having to write pieces about the double standard, about how we police rowdy Wrigleyville frat bros smashing windows on Clark Street after they remember that Chicago has a hockey baseball team club.
Oh, hockey. Yeah.
And as opposed to protesters in Chicago.
Yeah.
And there's my cat again. So I would get like really great hockey coverage because I'm watching Canadian hockey coverage.
Right.
It got to a point where it was pretty much if you needed me on a Saturday, everyone who was on student government knew, don't text me, don't email me, don't even message me on Facebook. Just go to the common area of my dorm building because I would always be there on Saturdays with my laptop, books on whatever paper I was writing, a cup of soup. I don't know why I always had soup on Saturday nights. And I would be watching Hockey Night in Canada.
Okay.
So with that, you also get a lot of ads for Canadian TV shows.
Sure, yeah.
And so a lot of Canadian TV shows don't last very long. They kind of last like maybe 5 seasons tops.
Is it the BBC right? The BBC, not afraid to end a show. It's okay if it's only six episodes. It's okay if it's only five seasons. Or is it that the Canadian market is small and they move on? Like, do you have a sense of why it is they don't last very long?
I feel like I should have an answer, because this actually ties into another thing, which is I did do research on Canadian media because I have a degree in journalism and we had to do like research on another country's media system. Mm-hmm. And so I did kind of cheat and go, well, I can watch CBC, so I'll just do Canada.
Right.
Because I can actually watch the news broadcasts.
Yeah.
I think it's very much that BBC model. And I think it probably also has a lot to do with the fact that it is funded by the government.
Mm-hmm.
So it is very much, they have that ability. They feel very comfortable saying it's going to be six episodes, or mm-hmm. we're going to end it after a certain number of seasons. And I think for some shows that does work particularly well. It wasn't on CBC, but my favorite show of all time, Slings and Arrows.
Okay.
Three seasons, total of 18 episodes. It's a show from the early 2000s about a kind of vaguely Stratford Shakespeare Festival okay. type of setting. And the artistic director dies.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy that they bring in to be the acting artistic director is a guy named Jeffrey Tennant, who had a nervous breakdown in the middle of a performance of Hamlet years ago.
Okay.
And so, of course, the show at the center of the first season is Hamlet. And so he's kind of wrestling with demons. He starts seeing what may or may not be the ghost of the dead artistic director.
Oh, no.
Walking around the theater. And so it also ties in very thematically with Hamlet and Hamlet being haunted as to, you know, avenge the death of his father.
And this is Slings and Arrows?
Yes.
Okay.
But it has only three seasons. Each season is six episodes. So you can easily binge watch that in a weekend.
Yeah.
And each season deals with a different play. Season one is Hamlet. Season two is Macbeth. Season three is King Lear.
Mm-hmm.
And every so often they're like, what if there's a new season of Slings and Arrows? And I'm like, I would love that. But also, how it ended after that third season is emotionally satisfying. And I think also with Schitt's Creek, that was another show where I think it ended in a way where it financially worked for the CBC. But also I think that it allowed Dan Levy to just tell that in like kind of tell it to its natural end.
Yeah.
So that's part of it. But so with that, I'm watching all of these different ads and I'm like, oh, you know, maybe I'll check out some of these shows.
Mm-hmm.
And so I end up noticing ads for this show called Murdoch Mysteries.
Okay.
And it's like, curious what this is. I'll go check it out. So the whole premise of Murdoch Mysteries is it starts off in it's very turn of the centuries because it starts off in late 1800s Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, I think they're in like 1908 Toronto.
Okay.
And it focuses on Detective William Murdoch, who is like part detective, but he's also kind of like part scientist. So he's always inventing all of these newfangled ways to try to solve a crime. And he's always assisted by Dr. Julia Ogden, who starts off as the city coroner.
Okay.
And then she becomes a psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
And the show is currently in its 15th season.
Wow. How many episodes a season?
It depends, because there's this whole kind of convoluted production history for the show, because it initially started off on City TV.
Okay.
Has five seasons there, and then it gets canceled.
Mm-hmm.
And then the CBC decided to swoop in and pick it up.
Sure.
So 2013, it moves to the CBC.
Okay.
And now I have just kind of given everybody an idea as to how old I am, because I've told you I was watching this on CBC and it doesn't start there until 2013. It then moves to the CBC, and it starts to get longer production orders once it gets to the CBC. And I think it's usually like 18 episodes a season when it gets to the CBC. That was obviously shortened for the last season because of COVID-19.
Right.
So they hit episode 200 during season 13.
Wow.
And occasionally also like Murdoch will interact with like famous people like Nikola Tesla and Thomas Edison. And of course they like Edison is portrayed as a giant jackass while Nikola Tesla is like portrayed as like genuinely a brilliant person. One of the constables in the Toronto Constabulary, so their equivalent of police officer, George Crabtree, he briefly romances Lucy Maud Montgomery.
Of the Montgomery Ward family, or
No, of Anne of Green Gables fame.
oh, yep, I went the wrong way with that
It's
connection.
okay. So that's the type of show you're getting is kind of like it's very silly, it's very escapist, but
The
it's also
costumes look amazing. I just clicked over on IMDb.
they do, and I follow the costume designer on Instagram, and it's fun because she'll be like, oh, we took this like weird Zara shirt and we found a way to like add some things onto it to make it look period fitting. So like seeing like all of like the brilliant things she does to like make costumes from scratch or to take something contemporary and figure out how to make it look Edwardian is brilliant. And so the costumes look amazing. And after so many seasons, you just get invested in those characters because all of the central characters, like even if they have some rough spots, the station inspector, because it's all focused around station house number 4 in Toronto, which is what Murdoch belongs to. And so the head of the station house is Inspector Thomas Brackenreed. And so he's a little gruff. Every time like there's the slightest thing that's good, it calls for scotch. And so like Brackenreed is like the character who's like the most kind of rough around the edges, but like you can't help but love Brackenreed. And then in season 10, I think they introduce kind of my new favorite character. There are two new characters they've introduced that have become my favorite characters. One of them is another detective who is played by Daniel Maslany, who's the brother of Tatiana Maslany of Orphan Black fame. And he is this like very eccentric Jewish detective who's always snacking. He's brilliant, but like all of a sudden he'll like suddenly out of nowhere he has a soft pretzel and it's where did you get that soft pretzel? We don't want to know. Moving on. But then so Julia eventually goes to become a surgeon, which of course that's very, oh my God, a woman surgeon in Toronto. And there are people who are very much like, you're a woman, you can't be a doctor. And she's like, no, but I'm more competent than any of the men here. And everything they put Julia in, by the way, is absolutely gorgeous. Like every single episode, I'm just like, oh God, Julia looks absolutely beautiful this episode. So Julia then eventually gets replaced by Miss Hart, is how she's known. And she is black. So again, you have like these kind of taboo, like breaking characters that they put into the corner roles. And she's a little mysterious. We get to vent, like things are still slowly unraveling about Miss Hart's background. But in the past season, she married this like very wealthy new money playboy. And she eventually gets like very, very sick of his shenanigans. And so she takes all of her medical science to make it clear that she is the woman of the house and she will be listened to. And so all of a sudden, I'm like, they made Miss Hart a badass. I'm here for it. And also Detective Watts, who is Daniel Maslany's character, the kind of eccentric detective that they bring on. In season 13, we found out that he's gay. And they gave him a very, very cute boyfriend who is a butcher that like everybody happens to use because that's the universe of the show is kind of like everyone's connected. It's very, at that point, I think Toronto is not the largest city in Canada, so that's reflected that everyone kind of knows everybody. And so it's also like every so often it's like, hey, I have this relationship to kind of like squeal over. And It's been also very interesting as someone who does do some research about fans and how they engage with things, especially online, is seeing how some of the fans do engage with the show.
Yeah.
I, of course, follow people involved with the show because that's what you do when you're a fan.
Yes. Yep.
But also there have been fans who have been like, I got blocked by the lead actor on Instagram. And I'm like, I'm assuming you were doing something that was kind of weird.
Right.
And that is totally okay if the if that actor blocks you for being weird.
Yeah.
That's actually, like, I think, good on that actor.
Yeah. I agree. Because when I think about the people that I am a super fan of, I'm always like, I ask my friends sometimes, I'm like, you just have to keep me in check. Like, I want to stay, like, endearing fan. And I don't want to cross over beyond endearing. Like, I like to imagine that these people have, they might be able to string together some touch points we have, but I don't want to, like, hammer it home. And those, like, I feel like there's been a lot of talk lately about parasocial relationships, and especially with, like, John Mulaney's news, and that's people finally started really investigating their, I think, like, people who don't think about fandoms started thinking more about their relationship with celebrity, with the John Mulaney news. Like, I don't know what it was that broke through in a way that other people haven't.
I think it was that, like, whole blend. And because of, like, all of the discourse about John Mulaney, I finally had to mute John Mulaney as something on phrase. Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's, like, one of those things where I muted it forever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sometimes I'll be like, I have the knowledge of, okay, like, when In the Heights was coming out, it was, okay, there's going to be a Lin-Manuel Miranda discourse that I don't have the energy for and I don't care about, because there are some very valid things you can say about Lin-Manuel Miranda's work. But there's also just, like, a lot of people, especially if you look at theater Twitter, where I feel like a lot of it is, this guy is successful and I don't like it.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I think a lot of that is also rooted in the fact that he is the son of a Puerto Rican man. And so I think the fact that he is brown, I think the fact that he is Hispanic, the fact that he is Latinx, I think that those two things, there's a lot of, like, unreasonable hate towards Lin-Manuel Miranda, even though I'm like, okay, but that dude can really write a act one finale.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, nonstop, blackout, just absolutely incredible. Yep. So, like, that's a thing where I'm like, okay, well, there's going to be a Lin-Manuel Miranda discourse I don't have the time or energy for. I'm muting that for, like, 30 days on Twitter.
Yeah.
John Mulaney is muted forever because I'm just like, I can't deal with this.
Yeah.
And I think, especially because, and I think that did require, and there was this brilliant piece on Slate this week about John Mulaney and people's parasocial relationships with celebrities. And I think it also addressed the fact that, like, because of John Mulaney's comedy, that was what was causing people to reevaluate that.
Right.
And it was something that I wrote about when I wrote about the McElroys, is that there's, like, really intense parasocial relationships with the McElroys.
Yeah.
And I, very, as someone who has, like, been, like, lost love of things because of fandoms. Hello, Doctor Who.
Yep. Yep.
Everybody got really, really insufferable around the 11th Doctor, and I didn't care for those episodes. So for me, it's something where I always kind of, like, keep myself in check. One of my favorite podcasts, I love that, the hell of that podcast. And similarly, like, one of my favorite YouTubers, I love those people immensely, but it's one of those things where I keep myself in check as to, I don't want to look like I'm someone who is, like, obsessed with these people.
Right. Yeah.
So, and similarly, it's like, yeah, I follow Yannick Bisson, who is the star of Murdoch Mysteries.
Right.
But I can actually look at that and say, I follow Yannick Bisson, not because he's the star of Murdoch Mysteries. That definitely plays into it. But I find, like, his posts about mountain biking to be delightful.
Right.
I love seeing posts of his dogs. He's really been writing some really wonderful, thoughtful things about how Canada has failed Indigenous and First Nations people. Mm-hmm. And so like all of that, it's, and I think especially with social media, we have to look and say, is this making me feel bad or is it making me feel good?
Right.
And I even do that with like hockey players I follow or Formula One racers that mm-hmm. I follow. Like, is, you know, Daniel Ricciardo, who is an Australian racer for in Formula One, right. does Daniel Ricciardo's Instagram account make me feel good? Right. Yeah, it yeah. does, because he's goofy as hell.
Mm-hmm.
So Murdoch Mysteries, I absolutely love. And when I was in law school, as finals were actually ramping up, I pretty much would study, get to the point where my brain just shut off after a certain point, and I would just put on Murdoch Mysteries and binge it, because that was just the most comforting thing I could watch.
Yeah.
And even this past spring, where I was dealing with health issues, I once again, like, that was around the same time Murdoch Mysteries season 14 was coming out mm-hmm. in the States. So it was once again, it was, okay, Murdoch Mysteries, you know, and it was a very rough season. I blame it a lot on COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that, it was, but that still is making me feel good. And once again, it's a show where, and I think especially since we're having that conversation about Copaganda.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people who were fans of Brooklyn Nine-Nine
yeah.
had to reevaluate their feelings about that show.
It was, did you watch this final season? Are you, I don't know if you're a Brooklyn Nine-Nine person.
I was, and then I lived in New York City and I had to deal with the NYPD oh. and I could not watch it anymore. Yeah.
'Cause it was really, I thought it was really interesting how they, because people were like, just come back for your final season in a post office. And they're like, we can't do that. Like, that was a fun idea.
It's very Archer.
Yeah. And, but what they did was they really like zoomed in on the personal relationships and took them into, I just wanted to say secular time, like non-work time, outside of office hours, a weekend away. They took them out of the setting and out of uniform as much as possible for the final season. And they really wrestled with some big topics. I feel like given the options the writing staff had to either ignore the world that has happened in the last 2 years or like dig into it, I think they handled it pretty responsibly for being what it was.
Well, and Murdoch Mysteries had something similar where this past season they did an episode where a detective in who belonged to another station house mm-hmm. Shot and killed an unarmed Black man.
Mm.
And it did feel a little very special episode-y.
Yeah.
And I think at its core, Murdoch Mysteries almost deals in kind of a bad apples narrative, where, especially since it seems like all of the other station houses are corrupt and horrible, mm-hmm. but even then I can look at it and say, okay, but there are only three people in Station House 4 who are actually good at their jobs.
Right.
And it felt a little very special episode-y, but then it did something very right that felt authentic to me, which is it ended the episode with Inspector Brackenreed coming in and saying, the Crown isn't going to press charges against this officer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if it had really been kind of a very special episode, if it had really kind of really been Copaganda, and I feel also like I'm maybe not the best person to do this because that's not my area of expertise, it would have been like, they're going to press charges. We got the bad guy. And instead it was, no, the Crown isn't going to press charges because that is what happens. And yeah. even for a show that, you know, has like a giant closet so you can microwave potatoes, that's an actual thing that is like in the show because they invented a microwave a little early. And
right.
Constable Crabtree is like, oh, sir, you can heat up a potato in there. And that's my bad Newfoundland accent.
Yeah,
I can't do it as charmingly as the actor who plays Crabtree. Like, it's still a show that like tries to be very grounded in reality. So like yeah. something we see, you know, we see Ms. Hart deal a lot with racism. We mm-hmm. see Detective Watts and also his lover deal a lot with, you know, trying to balance their lives and their careers with the fact that if anyone finds out, it's over.
Yeah.
For them. So it, and you know, even with Julia, there's the fact that like she comes into a room and there are either people who are very comforted by the fact that she's a woman,
mm-hmm.
or there are people who don't want her operating on them because she's a woman.
Right.
And even with Murdoch, he's the hero of the show, and the show has made it very clear that detective is probably the highest he can get because he's Catholic.
Right. Yep.
So, and I do appreciate that even as escapist and kind of fantastical as the show can be, that it still is very grounded in some sense of reality.
Yeah.
Because it also gives the show stakes.
Yeah. And how do you watch it in the US if you don't live in Kalamazoo?
Well, again, we don't know if it's actually available
right.
in Kalamazoo.
That right. If I don't, west. For people not living in the MSU residence halls at this time.
Because I do, a friend of mine who lives in Los Angeles, he lived and worked in Detroit for a little bit. And so he was like, one time on Twitter, we were like, yeah, you get the CBC in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
So it is available through season 13 on Hulu.
Okay.
And I imagine they're going to get season 14 on Hulu eventually. There's more than 200 episodes. You can take your time.
Yep.
It is also available through season 14 on Acorn TV.
Okay.
You can also try to watch season 15 through illegal ways, but sure. we won't talk about that.
Right.
And I will say that season 13, I think, is possibly my favorite season because mm-hmm. if I'm ever feeling down, I just kind of like, there are multiple episodes where I can just go back, rewatch them, and they cheer me up because they're so funny and they're so well written.
Yeah. Is this a show that people need to start season one, episode one, or can you merge in along the way?
I think you can merge in along the way. I think especially if you, at this point, you can probably just like go and read the Wikipedia article.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it gets really good once they move it to the CBC.
Okay.
There's definitely like some stuff in the past that kind of ties into later episodes. They're pretty good with continuity for a show that's been on the air for 15 seasons. So I definitely... You can. I think it also kind of comes in handy because one of my favorite episodes is in season 7. And they go to Newfoundland, which is mm-hmm. where Crabtree is from.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout the earlier seasons, Crabtree keeps mentioning all of these different aunts that he has.
Yeah.
And they're all named after flowers. So it's like, oh, my Aunt Petunia, my Aunt Daisy.
Uh-huh.
And so we finally, in that episode, we finally get the payoff and we get to meet Crabtree's aunts.
Yeah. Nice.
Except there is also the great reveal that Crabtree's aunts are all prostitutes who raised him. Which gets a beautiful reaction from Murdoch.
Oh my gosh.
Realizing the type of house that he's standing in
mm-hmm.
as he's meeting all of these charming, lovely women who right. raised
all of his one aunties.
Yes.
Oh, that's amazing. And what are your comfort food episodes?
So my one comfort food episode, kind of going back to that, is Republic of Murdoch, which is episode 8 of season 7. And it's actually technically a crossover with what was then another CBC show at the time, mm-hmm. Republic of Doyle.
Okay.
Which was about a private investigator in Newfoundland.
Okay. Same era, general era.
No, it's so oh. like we're like the crossover is that like Murdoch and Crabtree are dealing with the main character of Republic of Doyle's like great great grandfather.
Nice. Okay.
So it's a very interesting type of crossover. Mm-hmm. I recommend highly than season 8 because for like 8 seasons they've been teasing the like will they won't they relationship mm-hmm. with Murdoch and Dr. Ogden.
Yeah.
And so they finally get married, and the fourth episode is the wedding episode, and it's Holy Matrimony, Murdoch. And then if you can find them online and just like any episode that has the Newsom family.
Okay.
There are these incredibly rich, live on the shores of Toronto
mm-hmm.
People, and another one of the Bulls Higgins, who is just like the biggest, laziest oaf. And he's always finding like these, trying to find these like crazy schemes.
Mm-hmm.
So, Crabtree, on the other hand, like he believes a lot of conspiracy theories, but it's in a very endearing way.
Yeah.
So any episode with the Newsomes, just because they're so filthy and obnoxiously rich,
right,
that then lends to a really good comedic angle. And actually, I think the best episode of season 14 is one where the Newsomes try to create their own country so they don't have to pay taxes.
Amazing.
So any episode with the Newsomes are always a good time. But then two episodes in season 13, which I said is possibly my favorite season. One is called The Final Curtain.
Okay.
And the premise is that the son of Inspector Brackenreed, John Brackenreed, who is briefly a constable, and then everyone realizes he's a horrible constable, and he's like, I think I'm a horrible constable. I'll go be an actor. That's always been my dream.
Okay.
So he finally gets to be an actor, and kind of everyone from Station House 4 goes to see him in this play.
Mm-hmm.
And the lead actress is killed.
Oh, during the show?
Yes.
Ooh, okay.
So then there's all of the dynamics of all of these like egotistical directors and playwrights and just like all of those different dynamics you expect when you're dealing with theater. But there is one scene in particular in that episode where they think that a theater critic killed this leading lady because they find bullets in his bag. And then John Brackenreed is whispering in Detective Watts's ear.
Yeah.
And Detective Watts spends like a solid minute of this scene trying to dance around what John has told him, because it could look, John look very bad, particularly in front of his parents. It actually causes his mother to faint in a very funny way. And the reactions of Daniel Maslany, he actually delivers a nope in such a way that it's possibly one of the funniest line readings I've heard that isn't from Matt Berry, of What We Do in the Shadows fame.
Thank you.
So it's an incredibly funny delivery of just the word nope. And then he tells Murdoch, and Murdoch has a hilarious reaction as he's trying to also dance around this. And then that eventually gets told to the inspector, who also has a hilarious reaction. And that scene in and of itself is a reason to watch that episode, but that's a great episode.
So that's The Final Curtain.
Yes. And that is episode 8 of season 13.
Okay.
And then episode 16 of season 13 is called In the Company of Women.
Mm-hmm.
And in that episode, Dr. Ogden, Effie Newsome, who is one of the less fortunate Newsome relatives, but she is an attorney, and she is currently courting Constable Crabtree. And then this columnist for the newspaper, who is both like pretty much like a frenemy of everyone in the station house.
Right.
So they go to the salon. And at this point, salons are still kind of a newfangled concept for respectable women.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman who runs the salon is found killed. And because it's something that involves women, and because it is, you know, and because salons at that time, they're still much, very much associated with actresses and burlesque dancers and prostitutes, the people in that station house have no interest in investigating it. They can't get it kicked over to Station House 4. So Dr. Ogden, I'm going to keep explaining this while I keep trying to figure out the name of this character. So Dr. Ogden, Effie, and then the newspaper columnist, they all team up to solve this crime. And it's fun because we're watching this episode and we don't get the traditional team we usually have. It instead focuses on these female characters who are all brilliant women. The show very much is like, here are these brilliant women who are very much ahead of their time and kind of aspirational.
Right.
And they get to be the people who solve the case and save the day. And then we also get a great subplot where Inspector Brackenreed is trying to hunt down a pig for a big like pit roast that his wife wants to have.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also like a giant pig that's supposed to be taken to the Royal Winter's Fair that has gone missing. Mm-hmm. And so this boy asks Detective Watts to find it. And then of course we get like cute interactions, Detective right. Watts and his lover. Because of course the lover has a lead as to where a giant pig is going to be mm-hmm. as a butcher.
Yes.
So, would know. Yes. There is also a very fun, because it's revealed that Watts is Jewish by descent, but was not raised as such. Mm-hmm. So there is a very fun interaction where Brackenreed comes like storming in and he asks Watts and he's like, I was told you were of the Jewish persuasion. And Watts is just like, I don't know what this has to do with anything. Uh-huh. And he's like, why do you want my pig? And then it's like, oh, well, sir.
Right.
So nice. Those are very much my comfort food episodes. And yeah, those are the episodes. And especially since season 13 is on Hulu now.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have to pay extra money so I can watch this on Acorn TV, which I only ever subscribe to so I can watch Murdoch.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it a lot easier to watch those.
Nice. Well, Monica, we didn't get to DIY bike culture, which means you have to come back. Is there anything about the world of Canadian TV that you didn't get to say that you wanted to make sure you mentioned?
I will also mention, so the CBC has every night from Sunday through Friday, of course, not on Saturday because hockey night in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
They have a nightly news program called The National.
Okay.
And it's really well done. And I spent a lot of time watching it with then kind of legendary news broadcaster, Peter Mansbridge,
mm-hmm.
Which if you've seen the movie Zootopia, he actually like makes a cameo as a moose newscaster. I think that was like the one thing I liked about Zootopia other than the animation.
Yeah.
I think he's like Moose Bridge is the name of his character.
That's adorable.
So The National, I think, is very well done. And actually in 2020, because it does more of an international lens,
mm-hmm.
I very much was clued into the COVID-19 outbreak in China and then spreading to Asia.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of well before everybody else was.
Yep.
So that kind of gives you a sense as to like how the reporting is. The reporting is very thorough, I think, mm-hmm. in terms of US issues and all of that. But also, if you are someone who has the slightest interest in Canadian politics,
mm-hmm.
Throwing that out there, any of the listeners of the podcast are interested in Canadian politics. Every Thursday, they have a great panel called At Issue.
Okay.
And it is moderated by Rosemary Barton, who is their senior political correspondent. And there is a beautiful moment from the 2019 federal election results where she just like dances on the grave of the very far right party, the People's Party.
Yeah.
On air. I will send you the link because yes, every please. Time I'm feeling down, it's just like her just throwing shade at this bigoted politician, mm-hmm. Which the great, there was actually a great satirical headline that night, which was Maxime Bernier, too racist even for Quebec, which is a province that consistently passes incredibly racist yes. laws. And yes. so it's just absolutely beautiful. So she is on there. And then there is the other two people are two political columnists, three political columnists, Chantal Lebert, who is actually my bike's namesake. It came up because I referred to my bike as ma vélo, which is French mm-hmm. for my bike.
Yeah.
And someone said, oh, you need to name your bike Chantal after Chantal Lebert. So that's a weird thing. My bike is named after a Quebecois columniste politique. Andrew Coyne, who's actually the brother of one of the co-creators of Slings and Arrows. We're bringing it all back.
Wow. Okay.
And then Althea Raj, who is very, very brilliant and also has an absolutely delightful Instagram because she posts Instagram stories every single week.
Mm-hmm.
That at issue is on, so she can kind of like promote, like, hey, watch this week's at issue. But like she'll make fun of it and be like, oh, by the way, we all look concerned. I don't think Chantal is agreeing with me. Hopefully you agree with me. Mm-hmm. Check out the link. And I kind of appreciate that. Like Althea is very brilliant, isn't afraid to, you know, maybe like fight Andrew occasionally.
Yeah.
But also kind of like takes herself not too seriously on Instagram. Nice. So that is it. I think I left this out is you can watch The National every night live at 8 p.m. on YouTube.
Oh, they live stream. How nice.
So with that, you can watch that. And then of course, like, I think like 3 or so hours after it's been live streamed, they just like edit out the commercial breaks and you can just watch it straight through on YouTube. Mm-hmm. You can watch certain segments. So another time, if I'm feeling a little down, there's a cute story where they had a mass vaccination at the Scotiabank Center, which is where the Toronto Raptors and the Maple Leafs play.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like a teenage boy who's like, well, I wanted to get vaccinated, but it was even cooler because he was here and the Toronto Raptor is standing next to him wearing like a face shield. And he's just like,
okay.
And I did this thing where it was like mimicking like what the Raptor was doing. Right. Like, yes, podcasting, the most visual of mediums. So you can watch it on YouTube, just search for CBC The National and you can watch it there. And I actually recommend it for anybody who's kind of curious as to how, at the very least, if you're curious as to how our neighbors to the north with the government funded media outlet, right, how they cover the rest of the world in the United mm-hmm. States. It's a very interesting watch. And it's also very interesting because the two male anchors are Asian mm-hmm. and the other half of the anchors are female. So it also seems a little more diverse than what we would usually see on a primetime broadcast in the United States.
Yeah. Outstanding. Well, Monica, this has been a great way to spend a Shabbat.
Yes. And Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. I ran tech tonight for my synagogue. It was because it's Parshat Noah when we recorded this. One, we got a double rainbow at the synagogue today, which was
amazing.
That's
exactly what you want for Parshat Noah.
Mm-hmm. And then we did a pet's blessing. So everybody brought their dogs. So synagogue was full of little dogs tonight. And it was, I was just running the Zoom from home and it was hysterical. So
I that sounds absolutely delightful.
Yeah. Where can people, do you want people to find you on the internet?
I would love it if people found me on the internet. So you can find me on Twitter. My username is Monica_Reida. That is spelled R-E-I-D-A. It is Welsh, so it is not pronounced at all like how it looks.
Mm-hmm.
So you can find me there on Twitter, where I tweet about pro wrestling. If you want to see my thoughts on pro wrestling and Canadian hockey and politics and films, there you go. I am on Instagram at all one word, Monica Reida. And currently, as we are recording this, it is October. And so I'm doing one of those like Drawtober challenges.
Nice.
So you can definitely check out some of the drawings I did. Yesterday's, it was a colossal failure and I just like admitted in the caption. I was like, I tried.
That's the goal.
This sucked. I did a drawing. Yep. It didn't turn out the way I wanted. I tried. You can find some of my pieces on heyalma.com. If you again are curious about pro wrestling, I did a piece analyzing a Jewish wrestling villain and saying that he was actually great representation.
Mm. When was he an active character?
He's still an active character.
Oh, okay.
He's on All Elite Wrestling, MJF. Actually, he had like a big match mm-hmm. the day before Rosh Hashanah this year.
Ooh.
And so he tweeted out, he was like, I'm going to end Chris Jericho's career and then I'm going to celebrate. And then it's Rosh Hashanah. Happy New Year. And he ended up losing to Chris Jericho. So I did tweet out. Mm-hmm. I was like, I guess the death of Chris Jericho's career was not sealed in the Book of Life on Yom Kippur last year.
Yes. I did. I had an episode where I had Adam Salzer came on, and he's like a local ring announcer where he lives in New England. So we talked a little bit about AEW, and we also talked about like how he became like the ring announcer guy, which it was really fascinating.
Ooh, I'm going to have to go back and listen to that.
Yeah.
Especially since after we're done with this, I'm going to need to do my drawing for today.
Yeah.
You can also check out some of my writing at Barista Magazine. So those are kind of the two main areas you can find me, are Instagram and Twitter. And also if I'm on Twitter, anything new I'm writing, you can usually find there. I also have an essay on the Waterloo Public Library in the book Midwest Architecture Journeys, published by Belt Magazine, which is just a lovely book on all things Midwestern and architecture. And actually, if you go back through my Instagram, if you Instagram stalk me, you can find a photo from that launch party, which was the day of a Chicago teachers union strike.
Ooh.
So I showed up wearing a red shirt, but it was like a red dress shirt that I had.
Yeah.
In solidarity with the CTU.
Yeah.
As just like a subtle acknowledgement of, hey, I'm in Chicago for this book launch. I'm going to show solidarity because like the good union supporter that I am. So I recommend reading that if you want to feel sad about library architecture in Iowa, because it is kind of a depressing essay that I wrote because I was very depressed when I wrote it.
All right.
So those are the two main places you can find me, and definitely, you know, check me out on Twitter, check me out on Instagram. I'm not doing TikTok. I draw the line there.
You're better than I am. I just gave in. I gave in.
I figure if anything good is on TikTok, I'm going to find it on Jasmine Davila's Instagram stories.
Correct. My love language now is sending people TikToks. It's a problem. I gave in to the algorithm. I only have so much self-control, and it's not here for TikTok. And I feel bad about it, but not that bad. Not bad enough to stop. So.
If it brings you joy, that's what matters.
Yeah.
Because I think we can all agree that Twitter occasionally can be a flaming hell site.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Monica, this has been a delight. Don't hang up yet. When does season... So 14 is available.
14 is available on Acorn. But not on Hulu.
Okay. And when is 15 launching?
So season 15 has started in Canada.
Okay.
I'm mostly just, because of a cliffhanger last season, I'm mostly just like, okay, I need to know what's going to happen to all of these characters.
Yes.
And now that I follow enough of the cast and the creatives on Instagram, it's like, oh my God, they like built a train. I need to see this episode. So it is currently airing in Canada. I don't know when it's going to launch in the United States, but if you go to the show's official Instagram, even though it is CBC Murdoch,
yes,
it kind of covers all things Murdoch for all audiences. So, and Murdoch fans call them, they're referred to as Murdochians.
Cute.
So basically, it's just like everyone who's a Murdochian can follow that Instagram account. And I do know that they will announce when it airs, both in the United States.
Because
It also airs on Ovation TV for anyone who still has cable.
Okay.
So it will announce when it airs in the United States and then also in the United Kingdom on ITV.
All right. Great. Well, thank you so much. And have a good Friday evening.
You as well.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Now, go out and enjoy your favorite things.